Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello, everybody. This is Jay Shapiro. Thanks for listening. The main topics that I want to touch upon today are anti-Semitism and terrorism. Now, these are broad topics, and obviously they cannot be fully discussed in a short program, but I want to touch upon them because they're too important to be completely ignored. Anti-Semitism has been around for several thousand years, and it takes different forms depending on the period in which it appears. It never really goes away, it just changes form. Until the middle of the 19th century, it was directed against the Jews because of their religion. Then, the middle of the 19th century, it was redirected against the Jews because of their race. This is really stretching it somewhat, because there are Jews of many races. So for a while, you had a combination of hatred of Jews because of their race or religion or both. Now, you have anti-Semitism because there's a Jewish state. The new name for anti-Semitism is anti-Zionism. So hatred of Jews has shown a fantastic ability to change shapes and forms. The word for this in the dictionary is protean. You can look it up in the dictionary. It results in all kinds of interesting characteristics, like people who like Jews but hate the Jewish state. There are those who love the state and hate individual Jews, and so forth. It's really a fascinating topic, and it has resulted and will continue to result in doctoral theses being written in universities. And indeed, some of the universities are guilty of the same form of anti-Semitism that are being studied and analyzed there. So I'll talk about anti-Semitism, and I want to say a few words about terrorism. Again, a big topic. There has been terrorism in one form or another, I suppose, since the dawn of history. No two ways about that. But it's been localized. The issue is that with globalization and modern means of communication, terrorism has become more dangerous because it cannot be localized, and it also does not have simple front lines like in a normal conventional war. So I want to say a few words about it because we're in a long twilight fight against it, whether we like it or not, but we have to defeat it to save civilization. I'll be right back after the break.
Hi, this is Heather Dean. Is your home sweet home just a place to hang your hat? Check out The Modern Jewish Home every Wednesday at 5 p.m. for practical advice from a wide variety of experts and innovators about relationships, getting organized, growing your business, nourishing your body and soul, and even having a good laugh. So make yourself at home every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Israel time on The Modern Jewish Home here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello, everybody. You're back with Jay Shapiro. Just as I was sitting down to prepare today's program, I saw an article in the newspaper. It has nothing to do with the subject that I wanted to talk about today, and I'll get around to that. But I think the article is too important to ignore. It's an article that in the simplest terms defines the nature of the Palestinian Authority and the nature of the people whom we are told that we must help establish a state that will be our neighbor and which is supposed to live in peace with us. There are any number of reasons why this is not a good idea, but this particular newspaper article describes the problem most succinctly. As a matter of fact, the article describes the way that Israel behaves also in the face of this hostile entity, and the way that this hostile entity, the Palestinian Authority, behaves toward Israel, and those who appreciate what Israel is and what Israel does. I won't read the whole article, just enough to give the listeners of an idea of what it says and the point that I wish to make. The article says the following. A senior official in the Palestinian Authority who was successfully treated for cancer by Haifa's Rambam Medical Center has donated tens of thousands of shekels for the building of a recovery room in its pediatric oncology department. Identified just as M, the official in his 40s was diagnosed several months ago with a cancerous tumor and was referred to Rambam for further investigation and treatment. Every year, some 1,200 Palestinian children and adults living in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip receive medical attention at Rambam. I interrupt the article just to say, listen to that number. 1,200 Palestinians are treated in the Israeli hospital in Haifa. This is the Israel that's being accused of being an apartheid state. Getting back to the article, it says the following. During his stay in the ward, he often encountered Palestinian patients who began to show interest in the unique needs of hospitalized children. As his condition improved, he decided to give Rambam a financial contribution to improve the conditions of the treatment of all children undergoing radiation treatment here. He returned to Rambam, where he met with the patients and the staff, and in a modest ceremony, M handed over the money to establish a dedicated recovery room for the center. Now, he said a medical team caring for parents, including Syrians and Palestinians and other children. They're treated here with all the help that possibly can be given. Both Israeli and Palestinian society suffer from the damage of violence. I want a world in which we can all contribute to peace and health, take care of children, and save lives. Now, that's what this gentleman said. Now, there's two interesting things, or actually more than two interesting things about this article. Number one, it doesn't mention his name. It just calls him by the capital letter M. That's item number one. Number two is that he himself cites that Israel takes care of all kind of patients, regardless of whether they're Palestinians or Syrians or whatever. And finally, the one thing which the listeners, of course, can't see is there is a picture of this M standing together with the medical team that treated his cancer at the medical center, and to which, of course, he donated tens of thousands of shekels for the construction of a recovery room for its pediatric oncology department. Now, in this picture, there are five Israelis standing together, facing the camera and smiling, because they were on the team, of course, that helped this gentleman, M. M himself is shown, but his face is blocked out. So the main thing in this article that stands out is not just the text, but there's also this photograph with M's face blocked out. In other words, this wealthy Arab who appreciates what Israel did for him does not want his name or his picture seen because of the nasty reaction he may get from his fellow Palestinians. As a matter of fact, it might even cost him his life. So this will give you an idea of the nature of the people and the regime, that is the Palestinian Authority, that we are supposed to enable to establish a state on our borders. This is called the two-state solution. This article with a picture of M, who, and my hat is off to him, he gave a lot of money, he appreciated the fact his life was saved, and he also saw the way Israel treats people of all kinds, that in order not to make sure that his head remains on his shoulders, he was kind enough to take a picture with the group who saved his life, but of course he had his face blocked out because it might cost him his life. That will give the listeners, in a nutshell, an idea of the nature, if in case you needed an idea of the nature of the Palestinian Authority with whom we are supposed to live together in peace. Now, the subject that I really wanted to talk about at this part of my program is of anti-Semitism. Now, anti-Semitism is, it's an old thing. I don't think, you know, it's nothing new. But the interesting thing about anti-Semitism is it's been called, by the way, the world's oldest hatred. It's been called the measles of the world. The main thing is that it is protean. That is, it can take all kinds of shapes and forms, and it can be engaged in by all kinds of people on the political right and on the political left at the same time, which is quite interesting. Now, the growing tolerance for anti-Semitism by both the extreme left and the extreme right is becoming mainstream. That's a problem today. That is why it is so dangerous, and it must be exposed for what it is. Complicity in it and encouragement of it is simply encouragement and complicity in the oldest form of bigotry, not just simply against Jews, but against the Jewish state. Although historically it's from the right and from the left, it's now in the mainstream. Although there has been hard right anti-Semitism for decades, the bigotry of the hard left today is far more prevalent and far more influential on many university campuses. Those on the left who support left-wing anti-Semites try to downplay, ignore, or deny that those they support are really anti-Semites. They use another word which is supposed to make this sound kosher. The word they use is anti-Zionist. Those on the right do essentially the same thing. Neither side would accept such a hollow justification if they were talking about some other group. For example, a college in New York invited Linda Sarsour to speak. Linda Sarsour supports Islamic religious law, Sharia, punishing homosexuality by death, amputation for theft, death by stoning for adultery, all kind of interesting things, by the way, including slavery. She was accepted on a campus in New York City. By the way, it's interesting. This I add simply as an aside. The word Sarsour, in Hebrew, it's part of a... Sarsour actually means a middleman. I don't know what it means in Arabic, but there's a term in Hebrew called Sarsour Lidvar Aveira, which essentially means a procurer of prostitutes. So that's what her name stands for in Hebrew. And I just add this as an aside, by the way. So the as I said, this growing in tolerance for anti-Semitism is becoming mainstream. All around the world today, anti-Semites are becoming mainstream. It's no longer disqualifying to be out as a Jew hater. This is especially so if the anti-Semite uses the cover of hatred for nation state of Israel, the Jewish people. In other words, today an anti-Semite is essentially can be anti-Israel also, but certainly somebody who's anti-Israel is an anti-Semite. These bigots succeed in becoming accepted and even praised, not because of their anti-Semitism, but despite it. Increasingly, they're given a pass on their Jew hatred because those who support them admire them or share other aspects of what they represent. This implicit tolerance of anti-Semitism, as long as it comes from someone whose other views are acceptable, represents a very dangerous new trend from both the left and the right. Now, in the United States, although there's been hard-right anti-Semitism for decades, the bigotry of the hard left is far more prevalent today and influential on many university campuses. Those on the left who support left-wing anti-Semites try to downplay or to ignore or to deny that those they support are really anti-Semites. They are anti-Zionist, is the excuse that's generally given. And those on the right do essentially the same. They're nationalists. So when you analyze and expose these trends, a single standard of criticism must be directed at both. They are anti-Semites, left and right. I'll continue on this subject after the break. Be right back.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa. Each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, before the break, I was talking about that old subject, anti-Semitism, and I want to continue on that because it's something I wish it would go away, but it doesn't, and it keeps taking different forms, which is really the problem. Generally speaking, extreme right-wing anti-Semitism continues to be a problem in many parts of Europe also. Also a little bit in the United States, but it's interesting. I mentioned before that it's happening, it's becoming mainstream on university campuses. The idea is not anti-Semitism. Nobody says that. It's anti-Zionism, which has become a code word for anti-Semitism. And it's pretty much dominating discussions on the left of the political spectrum. As I said at the beginning of the previous segment, this Palestinian activist Linda Sarsour was delivered a commencement address at a City University of New York graduation just this year, and she's become a champion of the hard left. Interestingly enough, both New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and Bernie Sanders, who ran for president of the United States, or at least he ran in the primaries, they endorsed her. And that's very interesting. Also, Keith Ellison, who's the head of the Democratic National Committee, who himself has a history of anti-Semitism, he was associated for years with Louis Farrakhan, who publicly boasted, by the way, about his own Jew hatred. So the mayor of New York, Bernie Sanders, and head of the Democratic National Committee came out in support of this woman. And it's rather sad when you think about what's happening to the Democratic Party in the United States. It's not good for the United States not to have two parties that are each one a little bit right or left of center. But the Democratic Party, in my estimation, is going off the deep left now, which includes anti-Semitism. And the same trend is detectable among the hard left in Europe, particularly in Britain, which just had an election. And the British Labour Party is pretty much hijacked by radical extremists on the left. And it's known now to be soft on anti-Semitism. Those who tolerate anti-Semitism, who otherwise admire other things, they wouldn't accept any other form of bigotry, but they accept anti-Semitism, but they won't accept racism, sexism, homophobia. Anti-Semitism is okay in their book. For example, it would be very difficult to imagine Bernie Sanders campaigning for a socialist who didn't like black people, who was against gay marriage. But he was quite comfortable campaigning for Jeremy Corbyn, who's made a career out of condemning Zionists. And when he says Zionists, he means Jews. So there's an old history of anti-Semitism, and as I said, it's protean. It takes new forms and new shapes, and at the moment, it's coming into the mainstream, I believe, both in the United States and both in Israel. And I don't like to be very pessimistic, but you look at what's happening. Now, as I said, a lot of this anti-Semitism is hidden behind the hatred of the state of Israel. And interestingly enough, the malice shown toward Israel is unique in its nature and in its scope. It seems that no other conflict in the world than that between Israel and the Arabs attracts such a frenzy of distortion and selective reporting and historical fabrication and all kinds of imputations of bad faith. And there's refusal to acknowledge that this is the latest manifestation of this unique prejudice known as anti-Semitism. Look what's happening around the world, other countries, the way they're treating, for example, the way the Chinese are treating Tibet, or what's happening in various countries in Africa. None of this gets hardly ever mentioned, if mentioned at all, in the United Nations, but Israel gets condemned over and over and over again. Now it seems that the American representative in the UN, Nikki Haley, is really stands up much for Israel, something that we didn't have during the Obama administration. But a lot of people think, and as I was saying about anti-Semitism, a lot of people think anti-Semitism is a prejudice toward Jews as a people, and they believe that this prejudice died with Hitler. The argument that attitudes toward Israel may be anti-Jewish strikes them as absurd because they think you can't be anti-Semitic about a country. They also are often very decent people, for whom the idea of prejudice against the Jews is offensive. They don't even like that idea. And they point out that among those who criticize Israel most harshly are people who themselves are Jews. Now, it's interesting. Jews have something called Jewish self-hate. I've never heard of any kind of other self-hate. There's no national self-hate, to the best of my knowledge. You'd never hear of somebody in England being anti-British, or somebody in Germany being anti-German, or religious anti by people themselves. You don't never heard of Catholics who were anti-Catholic or Protestants who were anti-Catholic. But the Jews have a very interesting phenomenon. It's Jews who are anti-Jewish. And it's a semantic question. And the animus against Israel is bigotry because it's irrational, it's hateful, and it's dishonest. The one doesn't make the bigotry any better by protesting that it isn't anti-Semitism. And that's true enough. And yet, there's a reason why it's important to say whether this hatred, this Jew hatred, is different, because this is because Jew hatred is a particular species of irrationality that tells us something important about the depth of unreason to which the human mind is capable of descending, and about the society in which it manifests itself. This was pointed out years ago by a Jewish British woman, Melanie Phillips, who did a whole book on it. She wrote a book called The World Told Upside Down. It wasn't just about anti-Semitism. It was what's happening to Western society. But she discusses anti-Semitism. And as I said, Jew hatred is very special. Sometimes the Jew hatred stands instead or as a substitute for other disorders. And Jews serve as canaries in the gold mine of history. The phenomenon of the unreasonable hatred of Israel is essentially a new form of anti-Semitism. This does not mean, by the way, that all those who subscribe to the delegitimization of Israel are prejudiced against Jews, although some undoubtedly are. Indeed, it's been noted before in this program, I said some of the people who demonize Israel are Jews themselves. They're Jews self-haters. It means rather, and this is the bottom line, that they have all bought into a set of ideas about Israel that are in themselves a type of Jew hatred, although in ways that may not be recognized. The key point, I think, that has to be recognized is that anti-Semitism is not simply a form of racial or ethnic prejudice like any other. Rather, it is unique. aside from the fact that it's lasted for thousands of years, which others haven't, but it's unique in many ways because, among other things, it applies expectation to the Jews that are applied to no other people. And this was pointed out, I remember, years ago by Charles Krauthammer. It libels and it vilifies and dehumanizes Jews, and it scapegoats them not merely for crimes they have not committed, but for crimes of which they, in fact, are victims. It holds the Jews responsible for all the ills of the world, and say the Jews, there's a Jewish joke, by the way, an anti-Semite is somebody who hates Jews more than they deserve. I mean, they're a little bit they deserve. That's an internal Jewish joke. But how today the gross misrepresentation of Israel exhibits precisely these characteristics. Anti-Semitism is simply mutated from prejudice against Jews as a people, as individual people, to prejudice against Jews as a people that has a nation. First, the theological anti-Semitism wanted the Jewish religion to disappear. Then racial anti-Semitism wanted the Jews themselves to disappear. And now the latest mutation wants the Jewish state to disappear. So this hostility toward Israel, on account of its presumed behavior, has developed into an open hostility toward Israel's very existence and toward Zionism. So it has thus crossed an important line, because it singles out the Jews alone as having no right to assert their own peoplehood. Their Jewish peoplehood, the Jewish religion, the land of Israel are three legs of the Jewish identity. The attack on Zionism, the attack on Israel's existence, is an attack on the Jewish people as a people, and thus on Judaism itself. This applies equally to those Jews who have led the charge against Israel, as well as non-Jews. So bashing Israel is a form of anti-Semitism. There's only one Jewish state in the world. We are a unique people with a unique history, and the treatment of the Jewish people is also unique. There's no other nation in the world that hadn't been the target of attack for six decades. Now, the state of Israel is expected to make concessions to its attackers even while the assaults continue. Nothing is expected of others the way it's expected of Israel. And that's the bottom line, the point that I wanted to make in the program today. We're different, but we want to be different. We don't want to be different in that way. I'll be back after the break.
There was a time you didn't worry about terrorism. It was something that happened in a faraway place or to someone else. But now you want to know. Now you want to understand. Now you're afraid that you might be in the danger zone. You need to listen to Gadi Edelman on The Danger Zone every week, where you will find out the truth about what is going on in the world around you. Gadi Edelman on The Danger Zone, right here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
Hi, you're back with Jay Shapiro. During the first two parts of this program, I discussed anti-Semitism. This is an age-old disease of Western civilization, but it keeps taking new forms. And of these new forms, the two that are most novel today, and which I mentioned previously, are the forms now called anti-Zionism. And the other new form, and essentially, is that it has moved from the far right and the far left into the political center. That is why I think that this is one of the most dangerous things about anti-Semitism today. And the reason that I say this is because it has been picked up in the United States by the Democratic Party, which has also moved to the left. And it's not in the political middle anymore. That is, the Democratic Party is not in the middle. It's moved far enough to the left to absorb the left-wing anti-Semitism that comes out of or movements like the Black Lives Movement and other movements that think that the purpose of government is to provide entitlement for everyone because of their financial situation or the color of their skin or their sexual orientation or some other reason that has nothing to do with their ability to contribute to the progress of civilization. The Jews did well in America because they were willing to work. And in the early years of the great immigration to the United States at the turn of the 20th century, and until recently, you got ahead by working hard. Now you think you deserve something based on what or who you are, and not what you can accomplish. And the Jews are seen as part of the privileged class because they are where they are. Not all Jews, of course, but enough Jews to be prominent. But my experience is that they are where they are because they work for it. I saw it in my own lifetime. One of the great things about the American political system is that it has been stable for many years. Little parties come and go, but the main parties remain. Each one can be described as being near the center. One a little to the right, the other one a little to the left, but the Democrats have moved to the left and today represent those who think they're entitled. And that's not good for America and it's not good for the world. But American politics is not the subject of the program. I just mentioned it in passing because I have it on my mind. What I want to talk about for a few minutes is the other danger to Western civilization, which is terrorism. The war against terrorism is not like a war of two armies facing each other. Victory in that kind of warfare can not only be achieved, but it can be identified. The war against terrorism is essentially guerrilla warfare, which has no front lines, and which can go on for years and destroy the quality of life everywhere. That is, the greatest danger. Every time a horrendous terrorist attack victimizes the innocent, we find that the government's promise to increase security and things of that nature. What we fail to recognize is how allies play such an important role in encouraging and inciting terrorism. If we are to have any chance of reducing terrorism, you have to get to the root cause. It's not poverty, it's not disenfranchisement, it's not despair, or any of the other excuses offered to explain, if not to justify, terrorism as an act of so-called desperation. It is not an act of desperation. Many terrorists, such as those who participate in 9/11, are educated, well-off, mobile, and even successful. They make a rational decision to murder innocent civilians for one simple reason. They believe that terrorism works and it helps to push their cause forward. In some cases, terrorism is an end in itself. Terrorist groups attract a lot of people who simply like the idea of killing and getting away without law. And tragically, we have a bad situation. The international community has rewarded terrorism while punishing those that try to fight it. It all began, I believe, with a decision by Yasser Arafat and Palestinian terrorist groups to employ the attacks of terrorism as a primary means of bringing the Palestinian issue to the forefront of world concern. Based on the merits and demerits of the Palestinian case, it does not deserve the stature. Look what's happening around the world today. The treatment of Tibetans by China, the Kurds by most of the Arab world, the Chechen people by Russia are terrible. But their response to grievances has been ignored by the international community and also ignored by the media because they sought remedies within the law rather than through terrorism. However, the Palestinian situation has been different. the hijacking of airplanes, the murders of athletes in Munich, the killing of children, and all these other atrocities perpetrated by the Palestinians have elevated their cause above all other causes in the human rights community. The cause of the Palestinians, still dominates the United Nations and also a bunch of human rights groups. Other groups with grievances have learned from the success of Palestinian terrorism, and they've emulated the use of their tactics. Even today, when the Palestinian Authority claims to reject terrorism, it rewards the families of suicide bombers and other terrorists with large compensation packages that increase with the number of innocent victims. And it's interesting because, you know, I don't know exactly what the head of the Palestinian Authority said to President Trump, but rumor has that Trump took an issue with him because he rewards terrorism. So there is a name for people and organizations who go around killing, who help those who go around killing. That's called accessory to murder. By the way, the Palestinian Authority also glorifies terrorists by naming parks and stadiums and streets and all kind of public places after the mass murderers of children. That's the way it is. By the way, Qatar, which is now in trouble with the other Arab countries, finances Hamas, which the United States has declared to be a terrorist organization. Iran, it's another country. This is a Shiite, not a Sunnite country. It finances, facilitates, encourages terrorism primarily against the United States and Israel and some other Western democracies. So they don't suffer any real consequences for what they're doing. The United States glorifies terrorism. The United Nations, I'm sorry, glorifies terrorism by placing countries that support terrorism in high positions of authority and honor. And they welcome with open arms the promoters of terrorism. On the other hand, Israel, which has led the world in efforts to combat terrorism by lawful and even reasonable means, gets attacked by the international community more than any other country in the world. The promoters of terrorism are treated better at the UN than the opponents of terrorism. They have this BDS movement now, which is directed only against Israel and not against the many nations that support terrorism. Terrorism will continue as long as it continues to bear fruit. The fruits may be different for different causes. Sometimes it's simply publicity. Sometimes it's recruitment tool. Sometimes it brings about concessions. And this has happened in many European countries. By the way, it's estimated that countries in Europe, for example, like Great Britain, Britain may have something with more than 22,000 potential terrorists, because today you can reach a potential terrorist on the internet and by all kind of communications means that are under the radar, and the government has great difficulty stopping them. And that's what's happening. So we are in a long twilight war against terrorism. Some European countries that have been plagued by terrorism years ago released captured Palestinian terrorists. I can include among this Britain, France, Italy, and Germany. They released Palestinian terrorists, probably in the hope of preventing terrorist attacks on their own soil, but it doesn't work. These acts by these European governments were selfish, and in truth, they were immoral, and it all backfired. It only caused them to become even more inviting targets for the murderous terrorists. Look what's been happening around the world in cities like Paris, cities in London, cities like Manchester. When the terrorists, the main terrorists, are only acting against Israel, not only did the world ignore it, in many cases they subtly supported it by releasing terrorists. And so what's happened, it's all come back to haunt the West. So no matter how terrorism works, the reality that it does work makes it difficult, not impossible, if not impossible, to stem its spread around the world. The truth of the matter is, in order to make terrorism stop working, the entire world should unite in some kind of, and by stopping to rewarding terrorism and always punishing those who facilitate it, even if they're only countries that are supportive of it. So that's the situation. I don't mean to sound particularly upset about it. It's a fact that we have to live with. A lot of people think, you know, it's a fact like the weather. You can't do anything about the weather. Just talk about it. It's not. Something can be done, but it will take the combined efforts of the decent countries, perhaps some of the countries that are not decent, who see themselves threatened. Right now, there are talk about Israel having all kind of positive relations with the Sunni Arab countries because of the fear of the Shiite countries. So who knows what's going to be? But the war against terrorism is a long war into as far as we can see, unfortunately. So with that pessimistic note, somehow we will overcome. Jay Shapiro, until next time, take care of yourselves.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.